You are listening to Sheep Might Fly, a podcast of serialised fiction written and read by Tansy Rayner Roberts. Our current fiction serial is The Season of Dragons. Chapter 4. Fortune Hunters and Fine Eyes. From Kitty Hendricks. My dearest Dimity, I scarcely know where to begin, as you've missed so many of this season's great moments already. Mifanwy Highwater's great aunt Edith awoke Saturday last and strode down Bond Street, with her scales gleaming and her talons wet with ink. Such a magnificent sight, with several members of the Highwater family scampering along behind, holding up parasols to prevent her from burning in the spring sunshine. She's quite a lovely lavender-violet colour, and I suppose they want to preserve it long enough for Mifanwy and her sisters to order matching dresses for the... From Emma Watling. Dimity, you will be quite overcome when I inform you that Mrs. Walpole is awake and has scratched invitations for 3 balls in King Street already. You must take some comfort, my poor darling, in the news that you were invited to every single one of them. One of our maids ran into one of Mrs. Harefield's maids at the haberdasher's and said that invitations have simply been piling up in her front hall, all addressed to you. Oh, I wish you could... That's it, I said, casting aside the letters I had received from Kitty and Emma that morning. I'm ruined. This was my season. Oh, my dear, said Dido, giving me a sympathetic look. You have plenty of time to find your place in society, and the best of husbands. Not if I'm here, slowly turning into garden mulch in the country, while the city comes to life, I moaned. Some of these invitations might never come again. Mr. Rackham gave me a gentle glower from over his plate of kedgeree. You have been fussing for weeks, Dimity, about Chambray being too young to marry. How on earth can you, as his twin sister, be on the shelf? I gaped at him, quite horrified at what had come out of his mouth. Mr. Rackham! I did not say on the shelf, and even if I was on the shelf, actually saying it out loud is beyond the pale. You know that it's different for ladies. He smirked at me. I think you have a few seasons yet before you need to worry. I shot him a grouchy look, and then fluttered my letters open again, returning to Emma's. There are rumours that Mr. Leonidas has engaged himself secretly to one of the Thistlegrass sisters, and no one knows which one, but all of them have been invited to Lady Dorchester's pearl hunt in the Wyvern Gardens. I shall have a new bonnet, and Kitty... If Chambray marries Miss Bellamy, I said, there are several families in Abilene from whom I would never receive an invitation ever again. There were hunter families in the city, of course there were, but those who took part in the social whirl of the 900 knew how to be discreet about their sources of wealth. They treated the dragons of society with respect, no matter what they might get up to in the mountains, while tracking wild wyverns through distant lands. Meanwhile, Emma's papa was an outspoken member of Parliament who championed rights for rural dragons. Kitty's older sister had been cut off when she eloped with a hunter. If my brother wed a country girl who thought it appropriate to wear battle trophies with a ball gown, while her mother boasted in public about her family's legendary kills, many of my closest friends and connections could turn to dust on the wind. Rackham attacked his breakfast with a fork, as if it had insulted his aunt. He's not going to marry her, he said firmly. It's not that serious. The funny thing is, if I were to pick a Bellamy sister who might attract Chambray, I would have thought Laura, the sharp-edged and mocking second eldest, far more of a danger. Chambray has always been drawn to those more intelligent and cutting than himself. Hence the surprisingly close friendship that exists between himself and Mr. Rackham. Outsiders are often surprised at the bond between the two men, considering their difference in years, lack of shared school experience, and their deeply contrasting personalities. Having watched their friendship unfold in real time, I can confirm it was rather like watching a tiny kitten charm a haughty stallion. Miss Leader, if she shared her sister's searing wit, was keeping it well hidden. Today's excursion was the Maypole Festival on the town green, some form of ribbon-themed spring picnic, though of course there was dancing, because this entire town was conspiring to hurl potential brides at my brother. Since there was nothing else to do but watch children attempt to tie each other in knots or eat overstuffed cream cakes, Dido and I made an effort to draw the eldest Miss Bellamy into quiet conversation. It was not that we wished to get to know her better. Hopefully we would never need to. But we did intend to demonstrate to Chambray that we were not the snobs he thought. We spoke of gloves and hats and spring traditions, and of course the conversation inevitably turned to our brother. This was quite the revelation. There was no ambitious gleam in Miss Bellamy's eye when we mentioned Chambray. She did not seize the opportunity to pump us for personal details of his tastes and preferences, as happens so often in the city. Since he came into his fortune less than a year ago, the eligible misses had been circling like buzzards. She did not tilt her head and sigh in any wistful way, as you might expect from any young lady whose head has been turned by a gentleman's affection. Miss Bellamy was either the most politely discreet person I had ever met, or she genuinely had no romantic designs on my brother. It was quite the shock. She spoke of the town and how nice everyone was, and how she liked to dance, and how she liked to read a little, but mostly she preferred to hear one of her sisters read aloud while she did her sewing, as that way it did not hurt her head. Dido gave me a triumphant look over Miss Bellamy's bonnet, convinced I had been far too worried. Her family might have made their fortune in blood and cruelty, but the eldest daughter was no threat. We were not out of the woods yet. Our brother might easily stumble into a permanent blunder, even if Miss Bellamy was not love-struck enough to trap him. There was still that dreadful mother with golden guineas glowing in her eyes. Still, we could be assured that once we finally dragged Chambray away from the tiny town that never was, we would not be leaving a broken heart behind us. Little did we know that a new threat was coming from a different member of her family. From Miss Dimity Iverwald to Miss Tatiana Rackham, the Malachite Estate. My dear Tatiana, as your brother will have informed you, we are settled at Elderflower Hall for the season. I am bereft. Of course, you are not old enough yet to have properly enjoyed the fabulous sights and society of Abilene in spring. I look forward to introducing you to it all once you're out in a few years. Do not concern yourself that your brother will be too much the ogre in keeping you from the fun of city life. I know he is vigilant when it comes to your protection, but by the time you are out, I am sure to be married and terribly respectable, so I can bring you to all the best parties and displays. Now that Mr. Rackham has seen how fiercely I defend my own brother against inappropriate courtships, I am sure he will trust me to take you about the place. In the meantime, I rather envy you your army of governesses. If one must be trapped in the country, at least you're using your time to build your accomplishments and extend your education. We have been entertained here in Merry West by a series of assemblies at which my brother has become quite the centre of attention, as he is wont to do. As for your brother, well, you know I never gossip about Mr. Rackham. He is such a respectable gentleman, and rarely makes any misstep worth crowing about. I hope you will not think too badly of him, to hear he has quite offended the majority of society here in Merriwest, or at least that portion of this rural society that despises gentlemen who are reluctant to run headlong into marriage. This town teems with unmarried ladies, no eligible gentlemen to speak of at all, which can be the only explanation of how they can speak of nothing but the regiment coming to town next week. Your brother has sensibly kept aloof, so as not to encourage any of the local young ladies. One lady in particular, the sharp and forthright Miss Laura Bellamy, has caused quite a fuss about it. Several dances ago, my brother attempted with headstrong enthusiasm to persuade your brother to ask this lady to dance. Mr. Rackham was not interested in doing so. Miss Laura somehow learned of this matter, and has taken it as a personal slight, informing everyone in town that he is haughty and proud. Why, at a recent town gathering on the green, which I can describe only as the ribboning, let us not inquire why any public event requires more than 3 maypoles, I overheard Miss Laura reenacting the whole matter to her friends as a form of pantomime. The cheek of it! Any sensible person would assume that after such an insult, Mr. Rackham would be justified in having nothing more to do with the impertinent young lady. And yet, only an hour or so later, it all happened again, to the backdrop of a local brass band, and the squeals of local children weaving maypole ribbons with sticky-fingered fervour. This time, the local squire presented Mr. Rackham to Miss Laura, practically insisting that they dance for his amusement. Is there a town conspiracy to match the pair? Some secret newspaper we do not receive? Mr. Rackham conceded to the old fellow's demands, not being able to evade without being unforgivably rude. At which that lady had the gall to turn him down to his face, which would have been fine if not, how dare she? No. Perhaps I would not write about the ribbon festivities to Tatiana, alerting her to a pretty fortune hunter with fine eyes, who might or might not be playing a dangerous game with Mr. Rackham, would only upset his sister, stuck as she was hundreds of miles away. Tatiana could do nothing to save our men from making terrible mistakes. As I scrumpled up the letter I had been writing in the Elderflower Hall library, my thoughts drifted back to yesterday's awful ribbon fair, and what happened after Miss Laura Bellamy laughed off Mr. Rackham's invitation. "There you are," I said, approaching Mr. Rackham from behind, as if I had only just spotted him and not witnessed the Bellamy girl's latest attempt to humiliate him. Sir Willem at least had the grace to withdraw red-faced after causing this disaster. Mr. Rackham had not moved. He stood there with a rather strange look on his face as Miss Laura skipped away through the crowd. "Ah, Dimity," he said, as I rustled at his elbow. "Are you enjoying the revels?" "Oh, sarcasm, how I had missed you. I have spent the last half hour being sweet and polite to the elder Miss Bellamy," I informed him, "only to discover that she is genuinely insufferably nice." He did not sound sarcastic this time, but his lips twitched with amusement. "Yes!" I exclaimed, finally someone to share my frustration. "Even if she were a suitable match for Chambray, we would have to put a stop to it. any children born to that pair would be made of sugar and moonbeams, and would surely dissolve in the first shower of rain. It was such a relief to be around someone who did not look at you like a monster when you said unkind things. I thought of unkind things several times a day, and one can't always keep them on the inside without giving oneself a terrible stomach ache. Mr. Rackham's eyes were fastened thoughtfully on the distance, lost in thought. Miss Bellamy was no longer in sight, having dragged Miss Ellis off into a hedgerow somewhere, probably to relate with vengeful glee how she had cut a gentleman's pride to ribbons. "What has you in such a reverie?" I asked, tapping Rackham on the arm with my pearl-tipped fan. "I hope you're not plotting vengeance against this dreary little town. That's my hobby. I suppose I might be willing to take you on as a henchman, if you promise to supply me with a ready supply of reusable witty insults." No one was better at sharply worded, clever drops of verbal poison than Mr. Rackham, and the Society of Merrywist was bound to have provided him with a great deal of inspiration. "On the contrary," he said, blinking rapidly and offering me his arm so that we might perambulate together. "I was thinking of how pleasant it is when a lady does not hesitate to speak her mind. And if that confidence is matched with a pair of fine eyes." Dread sank into my pointy-toed shoes, but I covered it up with a merry laugh. "Oh, dear, Mr. Rackham! Have you fallen under this township's spell as well as my brother? Which blood-stained Bellamy has caught your eye? You must tell me, so I can wish you joy in your future happiness." Mr. Rackham gave me a stern, half-amused look. "You ladies are so quick to leap to thoughts of matrimony," he rebuked me. "Most gentlemen hardly think about it at all. Your brother, for instance, is so determined to have a good time with his horses and hounds, I think he will not marry for another decade. And as for me..." My breath caught a little. I'd never seriously thought about Mr. Rackham taking a wife, except for that brief, whimsical time when I foolishly hoped he and Dido would fall madly and conveniently in love with each other. If he married, would we all still go about together in amiable company? Or would his wife have other ideas? "No, it is quite settled in my mind," I said, continuing the joke, though it now felt rather ashen on my tongue. "What a mother-in-law you have chosen for yourself. I am sure Mrs. Bellamy should move to Malachite with you at the drop of a hat to keep house. And no one would be able to sleep for the sound of my father turning in his grave," said Rackham, in a growl that really was the closest he ever got to a laugh. "No, I would not write a word to Tatiana Rackham about Laura Bellamy and her fine eyes. It was a mere moment, a nothing, and I should not make more of it by setting it down on paper." Mr. Rackham was too sensible to fall in love with the wrong sort of lady. He was not the one I had to worry about. I was sure of it. Thanks for listening to Sheep Might Fly. This podcast was recorded on Palawar land. I acknowledge and pay respect to the Tasmanian Aboriginal people as the traditional and continuing custodians of Lutruwita. Sheep Might Fly is produced and edited by Andrew Finch. You can sign up to my author newsletter for updates, follow me on Instagram, Blue Sky, or Threads at TansyRR. And if you like this podcast, consider supporting me at Patreon, where you can receive all kinds of bonus rewards, early ebooks, and exclusive stories for a small monthly pledge. If serialized fiction is your thing, I am currently serializing my next Teacup Magic novella, very long novella, over at Patreon for people who are subscribed at $3 a month. They're getting four chapters, they're getting a weekly chapter. The book will be finished up next month. in June, at which point all my patrons are going to get the completed ebook, still a couple of months ahead of the general release. So if you've been hanging out to find out what Metis Seaborn and her adventures on the good ship Caliban are all about, which was hinted at very much in book 5, then yeah, that supporting my patron is the way to read it early. Otherwise, you can absolutely pre-order this Enchanted Island now. I will see you next week for more Dimity Iverwald.